Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, and welcome to the Latin American History Podcast. Episode 129. Brazil in World War II. Part 2. The Campaign. Last episode was a general introduction to Brazil's involvement in World War II, and an overview of the time leading up to this. The next two will look at the war at home, a subject as interesting as the fighting itself. This one, though, tells the story of that actual fighting. On July the 2nd, 1944, the American ship, which had been sent to get the Brazilian Expeditionary Force, left Rio de Janeiro, and 11 days later, it reached the Straits of Gibraltar and the entrance to the Mediterranean. A few days after that, they were disembarking in Naples. Crossing the Atlantic had been achieved without incident. The Brazilians knew only too well that simply getting there was risky, given the U-boats, which sought to sink Allied ships. Conditions were difficult. They ate just one meal a day. But despite this, one American wrote that unlike most other nationalities his ship had transported, who were somber and apprehensive, the Brazilians were energetic and excited. They often killed time by coming together to play samba, he says, and lifted the spirits of his fellow war-weary sailors. Simply getting to this point was an achievement. Given that danger, the fact that Brazil had not fought a major war for so long, and that there had been political opposition to joining. We touched on that opposition last time, but it's also illustrated by the fact that they were the only Latin American nation to send troops to Europe. Before they could begin fighting, however, there were still steps remaining. In total, 25,000 Brazilian troops would fight in Italy, and that number of people couldn't simply march from the dock to the front line. People require organising into their units, as does the equipment and supplies they are to use. This is a big task, even if all of those 25,000 didn't arrive at once. A number of factors complicated this further in this specific case. The men were to be attached to the US 5th Army, so coordination had to be established with foreign commanders. Those foreign commanders were also providing much of the equipment, adding a layer of complexity between two armies. Most of the Brazilian soldiers had not seen either this specific American equipment, or even equipment of any kind that used the very latest technology. It didn't help that the Americans were bringing it in from elsewhere, and its arrival was delayed. A final short period of training was required, so that what they had learnt already could be complemented by knowledge of the methods used by that US Army, and the specifics developed to fight in this particular campaign. The Brazilians showed signs of the bravery and the burning desire to contribute, which would make them stand out across the campaign. But the first interactions were marked by cultural differences and confusions with their allies. The Brazilian approach was to jump straight in, while the Americans emphasized organization, planning, and training. They relied on discipline and precise, measured coordination. Members of the expeditionary force were bemused by the constant classroom-style theoretical lessons. Some had never even experienced this as children at school. Some of the letters the Brazilians sent home during this period complain about the rigid discipline of the American trainers, and the Brazilian general himself is supposed to have said that punctuality and accuracy are not natural characteristics of the Brazilians. Despite the anthropological clash, they found a way to work together, and besides, there wasn't enough time to prepare the troops as the US commanders would have liked. By mid-September, General Zenobio was taking the first 5,000 soldiers by train up to Pisa to begin combat. The nature of the war at this moment was challenging. Italy had surrendered by this point, and Mussolini was out of power and living quietly on Lake Garda in the north of the country. Everywhere the Germans were engaged in a retreat, with D-Day having recently taken place to begin the liberation of France, and the Russians starting to push them out of their country. With hindsight, we know that this was the tide turning, and that the end result will be the Allies reaching Berlin and completely defeating the Nazis. Despite the retreats, though, getting to that point was not necessarily going to be a quick and inevitable process. The Germans didn't necessarily think that this was the beginning of the end. All of their troops were falling back to form a formidable wall around Germany and surrounding parts of Central Europe at defendable points. In Italy, this meant creating what was called the Gothic Line, a front which cut across the northern part of the peninsula in Tuscany and Emilia-Romagna. The geography of the peninsula and the mountains which run up it created a narrow choke point with defendable hilltops, which could be used to stop the Allied advance. As those first Brazilian soldiers reached Pisa, the Germans were in the process of falling back to this line. Their first job, then, was to pursue the Germans as they did this. US and French troops were sent to invade the southern French coast by sea, and the expeditionary force was given the task of plugging the gap left by their absence. It was a good way to ease into things. German objectives were not to hold their positions or advance, but to get to the Gothic line in the best shape possible. The Brazilians achieved their initial objectives of liberating several towns and villages on the western side of the peninsula, north of Pisa. While the Germans could be satisfied with the outcomes here, as they managed to retreat without too much trouble, it was also good for the Brazilians to see light combat and to experience the sense of victory that comes with taking territory and settlements. On the 15th of September, they were tasked with performing reconnaissance of the town of Massarossa, but showing enthusiasm, they attacked and took it instead. The first four fatalities came a few days later, when the expeditionary force took Montepranno. The only significant difficulty they experienced during this first phase of the campaign came at the end of October. Having taken a village near Lucca one evening, they found themselves counterattacked in the middle of the night. The German soldiers in this area happened to be a unit of SS, among the most elite Nazi troops, and so after holding out for 10 hours, until they ran out of ammunition, the Brazilians were forced to give up their gains. While the US commanders seem to have judged it to be a reasonable thing to have happened, and certainly not unique, the Brazilian leaders were embarrassed and blamed their troops to a certain extent. This retreat stands out among the advances during this initial period, and the German counterattack was relatively unimportant in the scheme of things. It's worth noting as well that it took the American unit which replaced them in this position 5 months to bring the area back into Allied hands, so it wasn't as if the Brazilians had performed particularly badly. Now things were to get more difficult. The mopping up and chasing was done, and the Gothic line itself stood in front of them in the form of a diagonal range of fortified mountains. There had been a hope amongst the Allies that they could press the Germans as they retreated and prevent the establishment of the Gothic line altogether by reaching the flatlands of northern Italy before winter and the snows which came with it. This wasn't achieved, however, and so the Brazilians moved eastwards towards the centre of the peninsula in preparation for what is known as the Spring Offensive. This area had seen heavy casualties, so the Brazilians were needed to reinforce other Allied units there. At this point, we should introduce the other element of Brazil's Italian war effort. Alongside the army, the 1st Fighter Squadron was also sent to Europe. They had been trained by the US Air Force in Panama and the USA itself, and arrived in October 1944 to join the US 350th Fighter Group. The German Luftwaffe was fairly weak by this point, so their job largely consisted of reconnaissance, close air support, and escorting bomber planes. By the end of 1944, Brazilian planes had taken to the air 800 times, participating in 134 missions. When the Brazilian soldiers were shifted eastwards, the pilots went as well and provided support in the coming battles. We will return to the Air Force later.
Thank you to the sponsor of today's podcast, Warpath. The men of Second Company had their mission, but war is never predictable, and even the best laid plans crumble under the chaos of battle. If you're the kind of person who thrives in that environment and loves tactical decision making, then you need to check out Warpath, a strategy game that lets you immerse yourself in battles with realistic terrain, sound, and gorgeous visuals. With over 30 million downloads and a 4.6 star rating on iOS, Warpath lets you build the ultimate armory, customizing over 300 units with 1,000 unique modifications, and allowing you to forge real-life weapon parts to upgrade your arsenal. But brute force alone won't win the war. Like the Colonel, you need strategy. Thanks to Warpath's responsive RTS controls, you can use tactical positioning, air support, and flanking maneuvers to outwit your enemy in massive battles. You can employ creative solutions to take out your enemy, by using sniper rifles, for instance. And the best part? You're never out of the fight. Rapid recruitment lets you reinforce your troops when they're in the field. And even if you're defeated, you keep all of your resources. Experience an ever-shifting battlefield with army groups, artillery, flanking, air support, and more in this fun-filled war simulator game. So if you're ready to test your courage, tactics, and mettle against brilliant commanders from around the world, download Warpath today on PC or mobile by using the link in the description.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The first major test came at Monte Castello. This was typical of what the Allies were facing as they tried to overcome the Gothic line. In front of the Brazilians was a hilltop. It was heavily fortified with artillery, and defensive structures had been added to the natural difficulties of trying to fight uphill. That artillery could shoot down at them, not just as they tried to climb the slope, but also as they sat in the valley below, before making their attack. Perhaps making things slightly easier was that Germany was overstretched by this point, and so the soldiers defending the hill were largely a combination of the very young, recently called up and inexperienced, and the very old, in the relative terms of a military force, that is. These older soldiers had spent most of the war in Russia, and so although they were experienced, many were also tired and demoralised. Similar engagements were taking place all along the line, but this was one of the most difficult sections. It was here that the Brazilians had reached, just before the winter weather drew a halt to things, and so while often frozen, literally and metaphorically, the battle can be said to have lasted for about 4 months. To the Brazilians, both for the soldiers who longed to successfully rid themselves of the danger which rained down on them, and the commanders who were desperate to prove that their army was a good one, Monte Castello became an obsession, and success or failure there would be how they judged their contribution. In total, there were 4 attempts to take the hill. The first saw them make progress, and their American allies almost reached the top before being forced back. The second was almost completely conducted by the Brazilians, but while initially looking promising, it was forced back when the Germans pushed the Americans from the neighbouring hill. This would have left the Brazilians exposed and unable to hold their gains. The third, taking place in terrible weather, was also unsuccessful, killing 20 Brazilian soldiers, and their commander came to the conclusion that they would have to use all of their strength and numbers to succeed. It was 2 months later, when the weather was better, that Operation Encore began. This was a coordinated push across this section of the line, up the slopes of multiple mountains. The Brazilians were very successful this time.
They took the top of the hill hours before their allies on the next ones. Then they continued on, and added some of the hilltops behind to their collection as well. By April, they had moved to the town of Montese, and while Monte Castello is the battle which loomed largest in Brazilian imagination, Montese was perhaps the most difficult. It was certainly the battle where the most Brazilian soldiers died, 426 in total. The Germans believed that this was the main point of attack for this part of the campaign, and so they sent two-thirds of their artillery there. It wasn't, but this made taking the town very difficult. The Brazilians managed it, however, and this made holding the centre of the Gothic line impossible. A week later, Polish, British and American soldiers were entering Bologna and the flat lands it occupies beyond the mountains. Now the Germans were retreating again, and the character of the campaign resembled those initial battles. The Brazilians moved north, fighting another battle at Zocca, and then went west to Parma. They were then tasked with dealing with a large German force, reinforced by remnants of the Italian army, at Fornovo, just south of the city. By managing to encircle it and cut off escape, they achieved the surrender of a whole German division, the only one which surrendered in this complete form. The division amounted to two generals, almost 15,000 soldiers, and 800 officers. Although the course of the campaign was already set, this made taking the rest of Italy much easier. The German plan had been to regroup in Liguria, where another army was waiting. This was not now a viable option, and because this army had planned to retreat, a number of important bridges had not been destroyed. The Fifth Army was able to save themselves the trouble of attempting to cross the Po River while under fire with those bridges in rubble. It was at this point that the Russians entered Berlin, and Hitler's death was announced. The war in Europe was pretty much over, and the Brazilians continued onwards to Turin, where they met French soldiers who had entered Italy from the west. With the fighting over, they were stationed to occupy Piacenza, Lodi, and Alessandria. After the war, the Allies remained in Central Europe for a long time. It was not feasible for all sorts of reasons to simply go home. Germany was divided into four sections: British, French, American, and Russian, until 1949. A new government was formed in Italy, so a similar occupation did not happen there, but Allied troops did control parts of the north of the country until a formal treaty was signed in 1947. The Allies asked President Vargas of Brazil if the expeditionary force would stay on and assist in the occupation of Europe in some way. We will come back to the reasons behind this in the next couple of episodes, but Vargas decided to decline. Brazil's soldiers were sent back home by the end of 1945. They had fought for 229 days. The first fighter squadron had begun with 41 pilots, and by the end 22 were left. These pilots had taken to the skies 1,000 times over 167 missions, and this worked out as an average of 70 missions per pilot. This amounted to 5% of all the missions undertaken by the Allied Tactical Air Command which they were part of. 5% doesn't sound like much, but despite this, 85% of all the ammunition depots the command destroyed were destroyed by the Brazilians, as were 36% of the fuel depots and 28% of the bridges. Some of the pilots spent time in prisoner of war camps having been shot down, and so their wars lasted slightly longer than the remaining pilots and the soldiers of the expeditionary force. They had to wait until those camps were liberated. There are two Brazilian pilots who were shot down, whose stories are particularly interesting. The story of Danilo Maura was one of the most famous at the time, and became popularly known as Danilo's Opera. He parachuted out of his crashing plane, and was lucky enough to be found by Italian partisans, those anti-fascist guerrillas who resisted Mussolini and the Germans. He then walked 240 miles across the front line and back to Pisa to rejoin his unit. On the same mission, Joel Miranda was also shot down. He was unable to open his parachute so quickly, and so broke his arm upon landing. He was taken in by a local family who were sympathetic to the Allies, and they took him to a South African soldier named Steve Grove, who was also hiding behind enemy lines. Instead of trying to escape, Grove had established himself there, resolving to cause as much damage by subterfuge as possible. He knew people in the resistance, as well as friendly Italian civilians, and managed to get Miranda to a doctor. Then the two of them began covertly attacking German soldiers and infrastructure. Grove was captured and killed by the SS, but Miranda held out and continued to cause trouble until he found himself in Allied territory once the Germans had been pushed back. In the next couple of episodes, we will look at what Brazil as a country and its government hoped to achieve from joining the war, as well as whether it did get what it wanted from its participation. One of those aims, however, was to prove that Brazil possessed a modern army which was capable of contributing alongside the European and American powers. For the ordinary soldiers and pilots, there can be no question. They achieved this and won the respect of their comrades. If you've enjoyed this episode and want to do something to help out, one thing which is really useful is leaving a review wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps new people discover the show so that it can grow and I can make more episodes. If you want to gain access to an extra special episode every month, you can do so by becoming a friend of the podcast. There's a link with information about how to do this in the episode description. A huge thank you to everyone who's already done one of these things. And thank you to everyone for listening.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.